Welcome to the Big World Made Small podcast for the adventure traveler. I'm thrilled you're here. My name is Jason Elkins, and in addition to being your host, I'm also a former U.S. Army paratrooper, third-generation commercial hot air balloon pilot, paramotor pilot, ex-Montana fly fishing guide, advanced open water scuba diver, and a full-time nomad that's visited more than 30 countries on six continents. As a seasoned adventure travel expert with a passion for creating and sharing meaningful experiences, I'm on a quest to impact the lives of adventure travelers, tour operators they rely on, and the communities that host them. Every week, I bring you exclusive interviews with fascinating adventure tourism experts who have agreed to share their personal stories, favorite destinations, and some invaluable travel insights they've picked up along the way. We'll enjoy a casual conversation, create some connections, and likely share some laughs. It's my hope that by the end of each episode, this big world will feel just a bit smaller. Let's get started, shall we? Welcome to another episode of the Big World Made Small podcast. Today, we've got Jordan Jameson here with us from Bay of Fundy Adventures. Jordan, so excited to have you here. Our last conversation, we touched on quite a few things, and you and I have a lot in common, so we're going to try and recapture some of that and for our listeners today. So thank you so much for coming back and chatting with me.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, Bay of Fundy, where is the Bay of Fundy? For those people that don't know, because there might be one or two people that don't know.
Sure. And the people who might not think no go, well, I did a project on it in grade five, you know, 30 years ago and stuff, and which always, you know, is pretty exciting to hear. The Bay of Fundy is, New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. The two provinces in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia hug the Bay of Fundy. In New Brunswick, some people might know as the province, and a lot of people may know PEI, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland. Well, there's another Atlantic province there, which is New Brunswick. And it's if you go up the Gulf of Maine and keep going up, there's a perfectly funnel-shaped bay called the Bay of Fundy, and we're actually home to the world's highest tides.
Yeah, I remembered you saying something about that. What's the average tide? What are we talking about when we say the highest tides?
So it depends on where you are on the bay. Where I operate mainly, we can get upwards of 30 foot of difference between low and high. So basically in a 6 hour and 13 minute window, it'll go from dead low, and then 6 hours, 13 minutes later, it'll be 30 feet higher than where it was, which obviously has some challenges, some logistical challenges to it, but also really carves out the landscape and makes where I get to work extremely unique. But yeah, places, I think the record, I have to be, it's close to 60 feet, and that's kind of what got us the title in court, actually, of world's highest tides. I think it was a place in Norway that really was pushing the issue, and then after it was brought to the world courts there, I think we came out and we came out on top.
Interesting. So it wasn't just he said, she said, we've got the biggest tides. No, actually took it to the court.
It's documented.
It's official. Not just in the Guinness book, huh? So, yeah. All right, very cool. Yeah, I was imagining, as you're describing that, I'm imagining, you know, being out there with a group of clients doing kayaking tours.
Yeah.
I can't get my head around it. You might have to explain when you say it presents some logistical challenges. I'm thinking this is like adventure on a whole nother level.
Well, it is, and it really we do really live on two different tides. We live on low tide world and high tide world. And high tide world, as you can imagine, where I'm at, which is not only are there adventure tours from us going on, there's fishing, there's lobster fishing and scalloping. It's high tide world's a pretty busy time of day. And then with your low tide world is a little bit of that recovery time.
All right. Okay. Very, very cool. All right. Well, we may touch on that more because I'm definitely fascinated by all the different things you have going on there. But I also really want to touch on who are you, Jordan? Because, you know, most tour operators have some kind of interesting story about how they got from where they are or from where they were to where they are. Not too many people just kind of start off like, yeah, my father was a guide. My grandfather was a guide. So I'm a guide. I mean, you see that. You do see that. But a lot of people like yourself that have really kind of stepped in full time and done something a little different in this space usually have some sort of story, maybe started out doing something else and ended up here. So tell us your story.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was not that long ago that being an outdoor guide in New Brunswick was an absolutely impossible dream. It was not something that could happen because you were either going to be ski patrol in the winter or you were a scuba diving instructor down in Costa Rica. There wasn't really an option to be a full year guide in New Brunswick. And I was kind of always driven to the outdoors. I really enjoyed the outdoors. I was extremely heavy into climbing, cross-country running. Later on, as trail running became more popular, I was also into kayaking, all of these great things. Rappelling was huge. We had these programs in high school that really encouraged the outdoors. It was in New Brunswick. And through these programs was the first time I went kayaking on, you know, Bay of Fundy in the Atlantic Ocean waters and really tested my might on climbing and rope work and things like that. And I worked for a tourism outfit outside of high school, or when I left high school or finished it, and then through my first year of university. And then I went through university kind of doing the whole, you need to graduate with a job, you know, graduate, do something, get your degree, get a job, all that great stuff. I ended up kind of bumping around. I was in an arts program and was kind of enjoying that, but didn't really see a future in it. And then I was actually in engineering and worked at an engineering firm for some time and ended up just kind of leaving that firm because I started to see my life kind of start to get played out from behind a desk really quickly. And I got to say, the people I worked with and the people I worked for were amazing. They're amazing people. They wanted nothing but the best for me, but I saw this small window of time where I could, you know, reasonably make an extreme life change and still kind of come out from behind a desk. And it is scary for sure. A lot of people were kind of, well, you know, give it 5 years, give it 5 years. I really didn't want to start to get used to a lifestyle of behind that desk for 5 years, the money that came with it. I had basically no responsibility, very just your normal bills, your phone bill, things like that. And so I had an opportunity to maybe not make so much money, but in the long run, be exponentially happier. And so I took that extremely scary leap, scary not only for me, scary for everyone around me, everyone involved with my life, for sure. And it took...
a lot can happen in 5 years. I mean, yeah. Lots of things can happen in 5 years. You could have five kids. You
sure. Could, yeah.
You know,
my girlfriend at the time and my now wife, we were just kind of getting to the home ownership scene, that kind of thing. And so it was, a lot can happen in 5 years. And I got to give credit where credit's due. The people that I worked for have really had the rest of my life played out for me. And I think that was probably the scariest part and the part that really pushed me to go, okay, but you know, did I really want to be this growing up? Is, you know, is young Jordan really going to appreciate the effort I put in here? Or am I going to take a chance, take a risk? You know, I've always taken little bits of risk here or there and really kind of dive in the deep end and make this work for me and just kind of, instead of chasing money, maybe chase a little more happiness. And so far I've been extremely, extremely lucky and it's worked out for me.
Yeah, well, that's very cool. And you had told me before that you're quite an accomplished climber. You kind of mentioned it in passing that you have done some climbing, but you're quite accomplished in the outdoor sports. And I just think of something like climbing. It's that risk, right? If you're climbing, you're into those outdoor activities, those risk activities. You know, you're not, I guess, what, risk averse. It's like, okay, I'm willing to take risks to get to where I want to go. And I love that you just kind of, you know, I don't want to say it's natural because I'm downplaying it because I know it wasn't easy. Yeah. Right? I know it wasn't easy, but here's the thing. You did it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people wish they had. You know, and so although it wasn't easy, at least it was within the realm of possibilities for you.
It was. And again, credit to where credit's due. It became a realm of possibilities because after I left my professional, you know, desk job world, I kind of chased the outdoors a little bit. I worked for an outfitter and it was through the people at the outfitter who knew the people who were involved in outdoor tourism that I kind of was able to, I don't want to say sneak or snake my way, but I was able to make these connections. And it was because of them that I was able to really connect with the next person that was able to push me on in this next part of my life. And Ellen, I like the climbing analogy because it is risk. It's extremely risky, but as any climber will know, calculated risk. That's and climbing can be as risky as you want it to be. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm not one of those guys that goes out there without a rope. It's roped up every time. And really in these later years, I've really become more of a professional belayer than a professional climber in ways. So I'm just kind of guiding from the bottom, really.
Well, it's great. You know, there's the climbing analogy, and then you mentioned the ropes, the protection, and that kind of like those people along the way that you've connected with. And I don't want to say use them the same way you would a rope, but it really is about figuring out, okay, what are the tools? What do I need to make this happen in the safest way possible so that this woman that I love doesn't like live in a cardboard box with me as I'm, you know, a fishing guide in the summer and a ski patrol guy in the winter. And how do I make all this stuff work? So you were able to take all those tools in your bag and put them together. And that's, you know, it's pretty cool. And I think you also, I guess where I'm going with this is I think you get to take credit too, because this is not easy when you've got family members, you've just spent all this money on school, or maybe your parents spent all this money on school and you're like, I want to go learn how to kayak and take people kayak.
Yeah. And it definitely took a few years for the people around me to understand what was going on, because, you know, the biggest part for them was, sorry, you want to leave this whole landscape of everything all planned out and everything working out well to be what, a kayak guide? That's what you're going to do? You're going to go take people kayaking and that's how you're going to make your living? And it did take, I will say, a couple of years for people to start to understand how comprehensive Bay of Fundy Adventures is, just how diverse we are in our offerings and what we've kind of like built and continue to build, and the involvement in community and things like that. So I think now it's certainly they get it, they understand it, they see it. It's been drilled into their head that this is great enough.
Exactly.
That now it's certainly acceptable. And fortunately, I've been able to see, you know, myself, my colleagues, and now some other people able to make these decisions to work in the guiding and outdoor tourism world, culinary world, travel trade, everything like that. It's so it's been really cool to bring others along on the ride. It's, really.
Right. Yeah. It's very cool, because, you know, if maybe trying to imagine the scenario where you tell your family, I've got this idea for a product, I'm going to develop it, take pictures of it, put it on Amazon, and I'm going to sell it. I'm going to make a lot of money. People are like, oh, cool. Look at him. Isn't he like ambitious? Yeah. And
what an entrepreneur. Like,
what an entrepreneur. If you want to, you know, learn the trades of HVAC design, I think you'd mentioned you had some connection with that.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that just makes sense, because that's something people see around them. They see the AC truck driving down the freeway, or they called the guy and had him come fix their AC. So it's within the realm of possibilities, or they bought things online. But if you've never been on a guided, I mean, I was fishing guide before I'd ever went on a guided fishing trip. I like nobody in my family would have ever spent $400 or $500 to go on a fishing trip. You know, so I actually became a fishing guide before I'd ever even been on a fishing trip. So it's I could see why my parents are like, well, how are you gonna make money doing that? You know, like who would pay enough money to make it worthwhile? But then you add in the business elements, the same business elements that an HVAC company would have, you know, marketing, hiring, equipment, logistics, all those things.
Yeah.
It's, you're just selling a different product. So.
Oh, yeah. We're totally a real business.
Yeah.
Well, and that's exactly kind of what it, you know, sometimes I see and really what we're selling is more, it's not so life essential to most or some people, but the what we're selling is kind of like the spice, you know, the spice of life, that adventure that, you know, for a lot of people, the reason they go to work, the reason they work 40 plus hours a week is to go do something fun and live and enjoy the landscape around them, or travel to enjoy a landscape that's unique or new to them. And then that's where we come in, and that's extremely special because we start to see and meet people who have spent hard earned time and money, and we know we've all worked, you know, quote unquote regular jobs. We know what it's like to spend those hours at a place that you may not necessarily want to be, and how important it is that we deliver on basically joy when they come and see us out in New Brunswick.
Yeah, and I would make the argument that it is life or death in a sense.
For many people, this is super important. It's important. A lot of people work to travel. This is how they get from day to day. It may not be traveling every weekend, but they're going to take a trip or two a year, or one every 2 or 3 years. And it's important to me. It's important to the people I work with that we deliver on it, and you know, try to go above and beyond on every single thing that we do, and really kind of promote the province in a way that we see the province. Because basically one of our biggest, you know, when we hire people, we want to know that do you like doing this kind of work, and do you like doing it in New Brunswick?
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's, I want to definitely touch on that a little bit more about, because you'd mentioned that one of running a tour operation in a small province like New Brunswick, definitely, want to touch on that and go here. Bear with me here for just a second.
Sure.
You know, you had talked about, you know, we were just talking about, you know, that life or death, that look, I work really hard for this. This is super important to me. And I guess the easiest thing to do is point it, look at what happened the last couple of years, you know, a couple of years ago, where we went from people that were out and about doing their things, whatever those things are, to a situation where it's very, very difficult to get out. And I guarantee you that was a life or death situation for a lot of people. Unfortunately,
yeah.
that was a tough time. So it's really easy to look at that. And then I love the way you said, look, we take it as a responsibility to just do our best to make sure that we're delivering on this, because, you know, because otherwise you might be like, okay, dude, it's a kayak trip. What's the big deal? So what if I was half an hour late? So what if I didn't have the right equipment and we had to, you know, delay or whatever? Well, if you're the person that's waited through 2 years of COVID and finally got your first trip to go do something with your kids, it's really, really important. So anyway, yeah, you'd mentioned that when you go to hire, you talk to people, okay, is this something you want to do? And do you want to do it in New Brunswick? So help the listeners understand that question, because that's interesting.
Well, so with Bay of Funny Adventures, we're a fairly diverse company in terms of what we offer. So we have not only our shorter, or, you know, 2.5 hour to 6 hour kayak trips, we have our 3 day kayak trips. We are camping, we're making fresh food on the trail, to all the way to 5 day fully supported Funny Footpath hiking trips. And anybody who knows anything about the Funny Footpath, if you don't know anything about the Funny Footpath and you're a hiker, I highly recommend you look it up. It's a very challenging hike that takes 3 to 5 days on average to do. So when we do it in 5 days, but it's fully supported. So as you go along with your guide, we have a support team come in, set up camp, set up your air mattress, drop fresh food. And so your guide kind of takes care of you as you come into camp. They're cooking, they're fresh coffee in the morning. In the morning, you leave to continue on the trail. My team comes in unseen, breaks down camp, takes all your garbage out, moves to the next camp. And magically, your tents, air mattress, and another round of fresh food with fresh coffee grounds is there.
Uh-huh.
And so...
And you know, who says this isn't a demanding business? Right.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a great way to get your steps in if you want to run on our support team. Yeah. That's for sure. So we do. We have that component. We have our outdoor education component. So between September and June, we're working with students. and we're teaching them from grade 6 to 12, we're teaching them how to be outdoors. We're teaching them, you know, leave no trace style responsibility. We're teaching them about sustainability. We're teaching them how to kayak, canoe, camp, all that great stuff. Summer, winter, fall, spring, all four seasons, we're taking them out. We have our culinary stuff. So, you know, with those tides comes a really unique opportunity to be able to dine on the ocean floor in that way. So we're bringing mobile kitchens, mobile dining spaces out onto the ocean floor. And then, of course, we work in the travel trade realm. So the travel trade, we're taking people from different parts of the world for upwards of, you know, 9 days and showing them basically the best parts of Southern New Brunswick in the way that they signed up for, whether it's extreme adventure or really soft adventure. And I really love doing that. And then we also have a cafe within our realm of what we do in our HQ, I guess you could say. We have the Shipyard Cafe. So whether you're a hardcore adventurer, whether you're really versed in the outdoors and camping and kayaking, hiking, there's something within our wheelhouse for you. Okay. So I hired people this year that were just baristas, but they were really tourism adjacent, because our cafe kind of acts as a visitor information center, as people will come into the cafe and be like, tell me about the kayaking trips. And it's up to our people who work at the cafe to not only know about that, but tell you where the St. Martin Sea Caves are, to tell you their favorite trails and lookouts on the Funny Trail Parkway, which is right next door to us, how to get to the lighthouse, all, you know, what are the tides and what are they doing? It all kind of like interconnects. And in that way, it's a really, cohesive machine we're working with on the company as a whole.
Yeah, it actually sounds really brilliant.
it's fun. It's fun.
Because I'm thinking, okay, if you have a little storefront and you put out front Bay of Fundy Adventures, tours, get your tour here, you know,
something like
kayaking, hiking, da 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 da. Yeah, you can get some people that will come in. But what a great approach. Just, hey, come in, have some coffee, ask some questions. We're not going to sell you a timeshare. We're not going to try and you get the free tour if you do this and that. And it's just a welcoming environment that they get to come in. Maybe I suspect there's times when the people are in there getting a coffee and people are coming in to meet their guide or coming in to book a trip and they overhear things. And I see it.
We're a small company, but sometimes it is quite a scene out there. I mean, we specialize in small tours, so I really only take 12 people kayaking out at a time with two guys. But that is still enough on day-to-day to kind of be like, there's some action here. And the people who are only coming in for a coffee and a scone and things like that kind of see the action. And it's, you know, the village that we operate out of, St. Martin's, or where our HQ is 279 people in the village proper. So it's really fun to be in that old house and talk to people and kind of get them excited, not only about what we do, but about the area. Cause that's just as important to us. And the people, our guides and everything are more than happy to, you know, to steer you in the right direction of what's going to make your day rather than be like, well, get on a trip with us or get lost. You know, it is kind of like a promotion of the area rather than a promotion of ourselves.
You and I have seen both sides of that. I mean, I
go 100%.
So one of the things you mentioned was the community and the connection with the community. And you talked about one of the things you did to help kind of expand the season for your grades, because that can be a challenge, is more the educational front with the kids. And you talked about kind of giving back to the community, the kids. And you actually shared a story with me about that, you know, so just share with us kind of what that's all about and what are the highlights you've taken away from that experience working with the kids.
Well, certainly working in a place like Atlantic Canada in this business can be difficult, because usually a season would go from, you know, early June, maybe the end of May if you're really, you know, motivated, till the beginning of September, and then tourism starts to trickle off. Now we go mid-May to mid-October, because just the people we hire are around to kind of take in that tourism side of things. But we have an education side where we work, for example, with right now, a couple independent or private schools, whatever you'd like to call them. And we are offering grade 6 to 12 different outdoor educational programs. Mm-hmm. In the past, we've worked with First Nations individuals, First Nation youth, and kind of grew from there our educational side of things.
Tell me what First Nation, when you say First Nation, I think I know what you're referring to, but help out our listeners.
First Nations would be our indigenous groups in Canada. Yeah. Okay. So we've got several on this side of Canada. Well, more than several, a few groups that reside still in the province. And so we worked with the First Nations youth at one point to kind of get them outdoors and get connected with the roots with the collaboration of the elders and the community as well.
Are the kids excited about that? Is that something that they want to do, or is it something that they feel like their parents and maybe the elders kind of say, oh, you need to reconnect with your history, but they're like, but I'm playing Pokemon right now. I don't want to go do that. So what kind of response have you gotten from the kids?
I think it's certainly the responsibility of every elder, whether it's First Nation or not, to get get the youth outdoors. Now, I'm not saying you have to be aggressively pushing them out the door. I mean, my parents, they didn't have to aggressively push me, but I certainly heard stories of you know, get kids getting booted out the door and those doors being locked. See you at dinner time. I think with for example, the last group I had was a moose hunt with the First Nations kids. And this was pre-pandemic, and we were basically facilitating everything but firing the weapons at the animals. So we were facilitating the camping, the cooking, the circle up, talk about the day, talk about what we're learning, things like that, and kind of the outdoor skills. We did a little bit of fire building. We did a little bit of like understanding nature and circle of life and all that great stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it was actually a successful hunt for the youth. They did down two moose, and to bring back to their community, to bring back to their elders. And it was really cool, actually. It was one of the most profound moments of my career has happened on that trip. It's one of two really big moments in my outdoor adventure career. And that was, we were talking to the kids about, when you go back, what stories are you going to tell? It's important to tell stories and things like that. And what are you going to tell the elders? How are you going to pass this on to your kids and encourage them to be out? How are you going to, make your parents proud about being successful in this thing? And I was telling the kids, it's important to talk to your elders and everything like that. And I had just been only in the business 2 or 3 years at this time. Mm-hmm. And I said, I had one grandmother who was very supportive of everything I did. I think she was just happy to hear about my adventures. She didn't necessarily care if I was making money or what it was, mm-hmm. but she loved hearing about my adventures, was extremely encouraging for me whenever I got her on the phone to tell her about a hike I did or a business I'm being involved in. And I said, listen, it's really important to tell your elders because, one day you're not going to be able to tell them. They're not going to be there to tell them. And those are the moments you're going to really miss. And I had one young man turn to me. He couldn't have been any more than 13, 14. He turns to me and goes, I can teach you smoke signals so you can continue to tell those stories to her. And I just was like, boom, oh my God, like hit me like a ton of bricks and was like, oh, okay. Like this means something to the kids. Like this means something to someone. This means something.
There's a connection.
In a few days, I've made a connection with enough of a connection with this, at least one individual who was like, I want to help you, older person who's taking me outdoors, continue that touching tradition that you had before you couldn't do it anymore. And it was just like, holy geez, like maybe I'm not mature enough to be here. like that was the most profound thing I had heard in a long, long time.
It's very cool. It's cool that it's profound, that it's coming from a young man like that. And from the he's connected to his heritage, and it's just so great when you get to see it.
He connected it to me with no expectation of assimilating to his culture. He was just like, here's a guy who's very obviously, I mean, I've got some really forgiving lighting going on, but I am full Atlantic Canadian male. I am ghost white. I was for sure the white guy teaching, you know, the indigenous kids at your door. There is a little bit of a balance there for sure, but he just was like bringing me wholeheartedly into his culture, didn't care who I was, and sent me, you know, this little, you know, gesture that has stuck with me for years.
And that's a big part of what I think is special about adventure. And anybody listening to this has probably heard me mention it in a couple other conversations as well, is it's you know, it's not about the bay. It's not about the water. It's not about the kayak. It's not about the mountains. It's not about the moose per se, but it's about the connection that these things bring together. When we come together to experience something, you know, your experience and his experience are two totally different experiences. And yet you come together over a moose hunt, and that's when the connection happens. And that's like by far the most important thing that I think comes out of adventure travel, as opposed to, you know, going sitting on a, you know, at a beach resort or on a cruise ship or something like that, where, yeah, okay, you might be connecting with people that all look like you, sound like you, talk like you, and drink like you. That's not adventure tourism. That's something different. You can go down to a bar and do that, right? And that's what I love about this space of adventure tourism, whether we call it soft adventure, you know, wingsuiting in the Swiss Alps to going on a mellow kayaking trip, which with 30-foot tides might not be that mellow. I don't know, but
it's mellow. It doesn't come all in at once. It's very gradual.
I'm not sure.
You're 100% correct. And the connections we do get to share, whether it's the short trips and especially on the longer trips, especially on the overnights, when you know, those connections around a campfire, those connections about, you know, taking pictures of people in the sea caves in a kayak, which they're going to have forever, which is part of, we're privileged, 100% privileged to have that as our everyday. It's huge and it's great. And, you know, there's a decent amount of them that are time tested and we stay connected with some people for a long time because we've taken them on a trip to done something that they thought they wouldn't be able to ever do. And so that's a pretty special world to live in, I think.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you and I both know, and you kind of touched on it when you talked about if you're on the hike on the Fundy, what's the
trail? Fundy footpath.
Fundy footpath. You know, that you're out hiking all day, you show up and magic appears, like, oh, wow, look, here's a guide that's got our food ready and our tent ready and all this stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes this business that people don't always fully appreciate and maybe surprises them. Because I know that I've had many times when I'm like, man, I'm working my butt off today. I managed a lodge in Belize for a while, and it was following the landscape around all day. I had to go into town to get parts for the generator, you know, all this stuff. And the clients come in at the end of the day, and part of my job was to ask them how their day went, spend time having conversations about the fish they saw or didn't see or whatever. And they'd look at me and say, well, what about you? Did you catch any fish today?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, hey, they're on vacation. I'm not going to be the guy to ruin it for them. I'm like, no, it was pretty tough today. I didn't see any fish.
Yeah. Oh, so, 100%. And you're still, you know, our guides are extremely well trained. We take pride in getting the biggest, most proper certifications for our guides. So with that comes a level of we're having a great time. I still have to make sure you stay upright, whether it's on a trail or a kayak. Like, there is always that essence too, and that can get tiring. And then at the end of the day, you know, sometimes depending on the tides could be later in the evening, you know, you're putting on that headlamp to load these 100-pound boats onto the boat rack, take them to where they're stored, and you're just like, you're exhausted, but it's, you know, many times it's been a really great day. But Yeah, you know, especially with us being a small business and in a limited staff, everyone's doing multiple things all of the time. You know, I'm an owner and a guide, but you know, marketer, finance individual, whether it's bookkeeper or whatever the heck you want to call it,
you know, podcast guest, whatever. There's
unfortunately for the people that work with me, I'm also HR, which is a pretty, you know, and then being in the adventure, culinary, education, and travel trade side of things, which is kind of like the four pillars of our business. You do that across four different categories or different divisions of the company, and everyone's got, you know, several jobs to do. And fortunately, we're starting to really nail down those people who are taking, you know, so much pride in their work that you can kind of start to see like, oh my God, like this is going to work, you know, and, you know, God forbid to say the word pandemic again, but we're going to come out of this pandemic situation pretty strong. Pretty good, yeah. Pretty good looking, you know.
That's very cool. And in this conversation and the other conversations I've had with you, I definitely get the sense that you guys are just rocking and rolling up there. And I love your energy and passion around that experience. When you first told me the moose hunt thing, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And I'm like it kind of made me want to sign up for a program to learn how to do smoke signals, to be honest with you. I think you guys should offer that as a program.
That's a big part of something we bring into not only the outdoor education side of things, but we've had, I don't want to say full grown adults, but yeah, adults, when they come, they have the option to do something like meet with a First Nation chief to understand what it's like for the people now and what it was like then. And I mean, you want authenticity. Come on down to the Maritimes, or come on up to the Maritimes, depending on where you are. We've had, you know, travel trade tour operators come to us and be like, you know, we would like to. Here's a list of people, you know, we'd like our people to meet. You know, whether it's, you know, a woman in business, or you know, or a First Nations individual, or blah 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 blah, a list. And we go, So we don't put that in our itineraries because it's going to happen anyway. Because we're going to run into so-and-so, because when you stay at this particular inn and you want to meet a woman, well, she's going to come down, the inn owner, she's going to come down and sit with you on the fireside and have a glass of wine with you, and you're going to have your chat. It's going to be authentic. It's going to be honest. Buckle up, kiddos, because it's going to be great. And it's going to be, you know, a good time and a party. And you know, we're really lucky to live in a place where authentic people reside, and all of those interactions, all of those connections are fairly organic day in and day out, you know. And one thing I really like on a day-to-day basis, for example, like we get a lot of people from away, they're looking for their lobster, things like that, you know, they want to do their lobster dinner. Mm-hmm. And as we're paddling out of the harbor, for example, I go, great, that boat there, Captain Pat Spinney, he's got a food market up the road, he just pulled lobster off his boat today, why don't you right after this, just go right up the road, see his wife, Sandy. She's been cooking and cracking lobster since 3 a.m. She'd love to, you know, to hand over a quarter pound lobster roll to you. And they're just like right, you mean right here? And then with 300, you know, meters or a kilometer that way. And that's where I get the lobster roll that came from that boat. And you're like, yep, no, this is all how this works in this area. It's fantastic.
That's super cool. I haven't eaten yet today, and just thinking about that lobster roll right at the market. Oh, man.
It wouldn't be any fresher unless the lobster came out of the water cooked, you know? Like,
and then we definitely have a problem with global warming if that's
what's happening. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, so if people are interested in going there, what give us one or two things that they need to really kind of understand before they start planning their trip. Tell us how they can connect with you, how much lead time they should give, whatever you think they should know before they start planning a trip to come see you guys.
Well, I do recommend the people who do visit Atlantic Canada or the Maritimes, give each province a good amount of time. You're once you start to come here, you're gonna want to be like, oh, you know, you can drive through it or across it in 4 to 6 hours, depending on what direction you're from. but it's everything you see along the way that's going to want to make you stop. And I think that's the major mistake of people who visit the area thinking they can do everything in a day because it's such a small place. But you start to get in these little nooks and crannies of the province, the small villages, things like that, and all we have to offer. The biggest thing about New Brunswick is we are so spoiled, especially if you enjoy the outdoors. We, our biking trails, our hiking trails, our kayaking, our climbing, they're all top notch, just in smaller packages than the biggest, baddest things in the world. We just all have it in a smaller little spot. The, you know, the people are fantastic and really, you know, the Maritimes or Atlantic Canada really kind of, you know, they're where all the good Canadian stereotypes come from. They're the nicest people. They're the invite you over for dinner, even though they just met you kind of people. And I think so giving New Brunswick extra, even if it's not with me, giving New Brunswick extra days is definitely essential, especially in the small towns. If you're coming out with us, you know, we have, you know, Sea Caves kayaking tour, which is fantastic, runs twice daily. We also have the 3-day kayak tour, which takes us out to a place called the Fundy Isles Archipelago. It's a little closer to Maine. Really easy to get to, but there's an archipelago out there that's just a haven for whales and really nice islands that we camp on. And you know, when we say fresh food, it's kind of like our cafe was a little self-serving because we like good coffee. When we go out on these trips, they're the food's also very self-serving because we only like to eat good food. So it's usually like a maple plank salmon and vegetables and rice and things like that we bring out on these trips. But I've got a crew of colleagues out in the Fundy Isles today, kayaking around and looking for right whales. So there's less than 350 in the world. I've seen for the first and probably the only time in my life, I saw some this year, a few weeks ago. So they're out there right now, kind of looking for them in their kayaks and hanging out in the Fundy Isles. I'm a little disappointed I can't be with them today, but that's, you know, I'll get out there, no worries. But that's a 3-day trip that is spectacular, and it's fun. You learn a lot. We take all of our guests out in doubles. So there's also, those things are extremely stable, and I love them for people who may not be extrovert paddlers. Because even if you gas out, there's another engine in that boat, and the carrying capacity of those things means, you know, the tents are nice, the sleeping bags are fluffy, and we have all the kit we need to have a full kitchen with really good food out there. So I really like bringing people out on that trip. I think it's great. It's extremely fun for me to do, and if people book it, I get to go.
Okay. So again, self-serving. I understand.
Yeah, a little bit.
I see how you roll, which is the way we all do, I think, in this mess. Anything, so what is 2020? Because we're kind of at the end of this. We're pretty much near the end of our season here for 2023. Yeah. So any big exciting new stuff coming up in 2024 with the business or?
In terms of big, exciting, new, nothing big, exciting, and new. We've done that over the last few years, and now we're getting into a zone, a time of our lifespan where we're in the nitty-gritty perfectionist stages before we continue on to grow, which is really exciting for us because I was talking to my business partner last week, and we were kind of looking at each other going, you know what, that kayaking, that kind of ran itself. We have the best. People, I just couldn't believe how great and smooth everything ran and how everyone was just clockwork and awesome and you know, excuse me, and how everything ran so great. So we're just continuing on that. And then on the side, growing things like our travel trade industry and our culinary and outdoor education side of things, which is great. But on the tourism side, we're feeling more dialed in than ever. So that's been fantastic growth period for us. And so nothing new, nothing big, nothing, but everything's exciting.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely. I think it's great to be in that spot where you're like, okay, we're not just trying to keep up. We're really working on dialing in the details and just really maximizing that. And that's a cool place to be in. Congratulations. Not everybody's there. No,
thanks. It's in, absolutely, yeah. Well, and it's great that we have such great staff on our side, on our team and everything, and these people who know these trips inside out, and all of the crew is kind of up on, you know, what it means to be on the Fundy footpath, what it's like to be in the Fundy Isles, all the way down to the little details of, you know, the person I work with's wife found an arrowhead on this beach, it's this amount years old, and all of those little pieces of connection throughout history to now is certainly come together, because we've, as a team, started to really collect all of these stories and connections, and we're able to bring those connections to the people of who are coming to the area.
It actually sounds like a fun place, a fun team to be a part of. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone listening to this podcast, there'd be some people that just want to come do a vacation with you. I wouldn't be surprised if someone, you know, someone else reached out to you and said, "Hey, I'm really passionate about this site," you know, and maybe someone will first hear of you on this call. I don't know, but thank you so much for being here.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah,
it would be. And I look forward to meeting you when I can get up there as well. It just seems like a great place. And, you seem like my tribe. So speaking of First Nation stuff, we're all kind of part of the First Nation in a sense. Right. And, really appreciate you for coming on the show and sharing it with us. So thank you so much, Jordan. Thanks.
I appreciate you having me. And if anyone's looking to get in contact with us or see what we're looking to do, they can find us at bayoffundyadventures.com. That's Bay of Fundy, F-U-N-D-Y, adventures.com. We're also on Facebook, Instagram. I recently worked with a really, really cool young lady this year who got us on TikTok, which is not something I ever thought I would be supporting, but it seems to be catching. It's got a little bit of legs, tiny legs, but it's got legs. And it's an interesting format, but we're on.
She's just in her own way. She's teaching you how to send smoke signals, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
it's just like we're all connected. Yeah. It's all the same.
Oh, it's been great. Yeah.
It seems like smoke signals to me at this point. I do a lot of digital marketing stuff, and I'm still kind of like, ooh. Hey. So probably just showed my vulnerability there.
Well, why did that work and that didn't? I don't know. Okay. We're going to keep plugging away at it then.
All right. Well, good. All right, Jordan. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you. And I'll see you up in Eastern Canada at some point soon. So thanks for coming on.
All right. Yeah, thanks, thank you.
I trust you enjoyed listening to the conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you're enjoying the Big World Made Small podcast, please take a moment to tell the algorithm by subscribing and posting a review so that others can benefit as well. I also invite you to take a quick trip over to bigworldmadesmall.com and join our private adventure travel community to receive new episode notifications, special access to our guest experts, and perhaps even some exclusive partner offers that we haven't discussed on the podcast. I'll publish another episode soon. Until then, keep exploring. It's the best way to make a big world feel just a bit smaller.